I think I'm good, Ed. Oh, you already got it. Thank you. All right, folks, come on in, grab a handout, grab a seat, and we'll get started. Open your soda if you drink it this early in the morning. Maybe it's canned coffee. What is that? Energy drink. Very good. That's probably really good to do before the service. You'll be singing with extra gusto, right? Yeah, that's right. We all need all the help we can get to stay awake. So, all right, grab a seat. And what we're going to do today is a little bit different than the other ones. We've been going through the through the class on hospitality. So we've done 3 weeks on hospitality. Then we've shifted on looking at how that interacts with evangelism and outreach. And we're going to conclude today with what are we supposed to do? I've got several folks that I've invited to come and share a little bit of how they connect these two, evangelism and hospitality. So first we'll do a little bit of review. We'll pray first and walk through a couple things. And then we'll do a couple presentations. And hopefully, I guess my point with that is that it spurs us to be creative in how we both marry hospitality and evangelism in the hope of bringing more people to into God's house, that they may feast at his table. So let's pray a minute, and we'll get to work. Father, thank you this morning for warm homes, warm places to live, but also to meet. We thank you for your power and your beauty and your creation. We ask you, Lord, that this morning you would open up our hearts to see you, to love you, to rejoice that you've adopted us into your family, that you've protected us, you feast us on your word, you feast us on Christ by your Spirit. We ask you that you do that today, that both in this Sunday school class we would learn how better to reflect that and to extend that love toward others, but also that as we worship you in probably about an hour, that our hearts would be moved to worship you in spirit and in truth. Bless our class. We pray that you'd make it profitable, that we would bear good fruit as a result in part from this class, from you working through it. In Jesus we pray. Amen. All right, let's start with just a little review of hospitality. What is hospitality? You just shouted out, how would you define hospitality in a fairly narrow way? This is going back 5 weeks, so I expect it's maybe a touch rusty. What is hospitality? And the crickets chirp. No, I'm just kidding. I know you're just thinking. It's still morning, so... What's that, Deb? Yeah, caring for strangers. Remember xenophobia? Not xenophobia, but that's being afraid of strangers. Philia. That's right, phobia. Philia is love, right? Loving strangers. And so the narrow definition of hospitality is to invite strangers, those unlike us, into our homes and tend them, care for them, love them. We've also seen that that's a much broader stance of a Christian, really a disposition toward all, particularly those outside the church, but not limited to that. Certainly those within the household, too, who you may not know who are different from you. And the root of that, the motor that drives hospitality is not just a command of you've got to do this, but we once were strangers to God. And God in his rich mercy moved toward us and invited us into his home, and not just to put up with us, but to feast us on his delights, to give us every spiritual blessing that there is. A great picture of that is the Lord's Supper, where we get to feast with Christ. And that's the drive or the motivation, even the template of our hospitality. That's a little bit about what hospitality is. We talked a little bit about hospitality in the church. I just remind you of that. It's not something that we have to do all alone. The church itself is to be hospitable, but also linking arms with others as we show hospitality. We can use each other's strengths and really be helped by that. Last week, we combined two classes, evangelism, really bringing in evangelism personally, but also church-wide evangelism together with hospitality. Let's see what I think that's on your outline there. You just look at the bullet points, kind of hit some of the main aspects. But evangelism, in terms of hospitality, inviting neighbors into your life or going to where they are. But the first thing we looked at is giving them a taste of what Christianity looks like. Many of them have just never seen what a Christian home is, how it's set up, how you talk to each other, your priorities, family devotions, things like that. Very, very foreign. Many people just don't even know what repentance looks like. So inviting people in just to see, not to get down their throats and beat them, but to just be you and have them see that a little bit. Or even just love without any expectation back, where you just love them and put on a nice dinner for them. So that's some of what we looked at. Going to where they are. I think it's very easy for us to stay close to home, but not to go outward and go hang out where they hang out, just to rub shoulders. We'll hear a bit more about that today. Noticing where they are. Just noticing, how are they doing? What do you guess that they're going through or feeling like? And tending them. Serving lavishly, we looked at that. Listening and creating curiosity. And then just wondering, asking good questions and seeing what the Lord does with that. Then we looked a little bit more broadly at the church, hospitality, evangelism in the church. We looked at you'd think that most unbelievers never come to church. And yet in the study that Rainer did with folks who had become Christians in the last 2 years, every single one of them had been to church at least once. None of them had not been to church. And so unbelievers, I think in his study there's a little sidebar that 40% of atheists at least once a year go to church. First, whether it's a funeral, whether it's a marriage service, whether it's Easter, Christmas. And that should alert us to the fact that we have people coming and visiting who just don't know the Lord. And so as we love them as a church, welcoming them, treating them well, caring for them, inviting them over after church, whatever, that's a very easy, low-hanging fruit that we can just interact with people who don't know the Lord. One of the things that was striking to me is how many of those are our relatives. I think 40% of those who had become Christians were already related to Christians and coming to church once in a while. And we have that here too. And sometimes we overlook those folks that when we bring our parents, our siblings, or cousins, we just assume, well, they're taken care of because they're here for family. But it doesn't mean that they know the Lord. And to at least welcome them and greet them as well, I think would do us in good stead. And hopefully God uses that. Sometimes you can say more as a non-related person than as a related person. So just something to keep thinking about. Using the church's on-ramps, we talked about that, like the Wednesday night program or Sunday school or growth group. Again, just to rub shoulders and invite people into fellowship with the church. And then the friendliness of the church is also very helpful. A lot of people had listed that as, I think it was like third or fourth on their list of why they came back to that church or why they became Christians, is the church's caring and welcoming of them. Things like greeters, ushers, but also just somebody comes in smiling at them, saying, hey, we're glad you're here. That's a bigger deal than we often think. So that's all by way of review. I had 2 points that I got to hit quickly because they're a little bit party evangelism and a partying church. You know, like, what in the world? I think it's good to party. What am I talking about? Well, one of the books that I read, I think Get Real is what it's called. It's also on Outreach. He mentioned a couple of things. First, party evangelism. Here's a picture of, it's not a mosh pit, but it's like group wrestling. And if the ref isn't looking, you throw one of the opponents in your corner, and you all kind of beat up on them. And that's a picture of the church doing party evangelism. Now, but here's the difference. You're not beating them with the law. You're not trying to make them feel bad. What you're doing is you're getting them in your corner, as it were, and blessing them with grace and with kindness. Let me read exactly how he put it. It's much like tag team wrestling here. When the ref's not looking, one guy gets thrown into the other's corner and gets bashed. But instead of getting bashed, they get graced with mercy, both in word and with deed. That's the idea of party evangelism. And doing this together. You don't have to do it just by yourself, but maybe you have a few folks from church over and you invite your neighbors over. And you will lavish them with what Christ has lavished us with mercy, with grace, with care, with interest, with noticing. So that was the party evangelism thing. We don't have to do that alone. And then a partying church, I think there's 2 aspects to this that he talks about. A partying church, he says, doesn't spend all its time talking about how bad everybody out there is, but rather talking about how bad we all are and yet how Christ has forgiven us, that he's shown us his mercy and grace. You hear the gospel being offered to all, sort of that church where it's good news, not everybody else's bad news. Yes, it's a little bit of our bad news, who am I and where am I outside of Christ, and yet a reminder of, yes, but Jesus' mercy is enough today too. The other aspect of that partying church that I just wanted to hit was a partying church doesn't try to get all of their people into their church all the time and keep them there safely. It gives time to the congregants to invite other people in. and to go out and to greet them, have time with them. If I can quote from him, I think this is a quote, or it's a paraphrase, it's close. Instead, they give their people time to get out into the world to be Christian with their families and with their neighbors. So it's a partying church. Yeah, it has maybe different connotations, but where we're looking out with grace, with kindness, to invite others in, to enjoy them, and to treat them well. So there you see again hospitality and evangelism tied together. Now, I want most of the class today to go to these little presentations. I've asked a few of you to share. I think I have your names here. Did Amy come in yet? She's teaching the other class. So when she comes in, let me know, because she's going to share a couple things, and I'll let her go. But, Julie, I got you at the top. Do you mind coming up for a minute? And what I've asked, I've just known that some of you have been sort of tying together hospitality and evangelism, and I don't care exactly where these things go, but what I want these to do is not that we all go, wow, you're amazing. Feel free to do that. That's, you know, healthy for us sometimes. But rather, that's a really neat idea. I wonder if I could do that. To see, you know, that's a different thing than I would have thought of. That's kind of the idea. And if you're thinking Julie's amazing, she is. But let that just bounce off her and, you know, give praise to God that, hey, this is a way that the Lord, that this sister is seeking to be obedient to the Lord. So, Dave, Ed, could you turn on the... Perfect. Thank you. He was ready. So go ahead. Thanks, Billy. You'll probably have to hold that.
Eat it.
Yeah, perfect. Thank you.
All right. Good morning. So what I have to share is sort of anecdotal, and I feel like my life has become somewhat scattered because I'm meeting the needs of little people on a regular basis. I homeschool my kids, as you probably know, and so that fills up a big part of my time. And so sometimes I think of caring for kids as being sort of a hindrance because kids make messes and my house doesn't stay very clean a lot of the time. But at the same time, my kids have so much love to give to people, and I've started to realize that as people come into our home, I might be spent and not have a lot left to give people. But my children love interacting with people, and it's a valuable part of their growing up and their lives to be able to share their love and be able to have conversations with people and to learn from other people and to they're like little happy full love tanks to share with people, and it's really joyful to be able to see that and see them enjoy people around them. So we've really enjoyed home group. It seems like it's been a short time, but I guess it's been a couple of years now that we've had home group, and it's mostly met in our home, and that's been exciting, I guess, because I realize, wow, it happens successfully on a regular basis, and people don't say, oh, wow, your house is a mess, or you have toys that keep popping out or whatever. So that's been encouraging to realize we can have people in our house on a regular basis, and you know, it happens and it works, and in spite of and including our wonderful children. And also, we had remodeled parts of our home. We added a room downstairs when I was pregnant with Clara, and we also added to our kitchen. And as I started thinking about my home, and I realized, what has God made us for? But to interact with people, to relate to people. And if I use up the majority of my time just on my family, I mean, that's wonderful, but it's so much more meaningful to interact with other people as well and to share what God's given us as a family and as a family who loves each other, to be able to share that with other people around us. And so it's been really rewarding and fulfilling to be able to use our home and welcome people into it. And I think of hospitality, although it's very possible to do hospitality at a park or other places, it's interacting with people, but I love bringing people into our home and sharing food together. And I think the food can be simple or complicated, kind of whatever is possible at the time. And that's not really the main point of it, but I do think food brings people together. I had a couple other thoughts. So I used to think of Halloween as like a Satan holiday, and I didn't go trick-or-treating as a kid. But as a parent and living in our little community, we've really enjoyed the past few Halloweens taking our kids to our neighbors' houses. And this past Halloween, we actually went into our neighbor's home and talked with them for a while. And I realized that you can sort of redeem Halloween and enjoy it as a chance to interact with your neighbors and to get to know your neighbors. It's the one time of the year that people are sitting out on their porches and have, you know, have their arms welcoming people to come and say hi, and they want to see children, and they're excited to see children. So that's been, I don't know, just an interesting thing I've thought about as far as Halloween can be an opportunity, a really neat opportunity to get to know neighbors that you wouldn't otherwise rub shoulders with or see. Mm-hmm. Another thing is I think of my limitations. Sometimes my sister Heidi always has people on her heart, and she lives with my family at home, and she has a home, but as far as, like, she doesn't have her own home. And sometimes hospitality for me means just saying yes to Heidi, bringing someone who's on her heart and bringing her into our home. And that's very simple for me in a sense, but it's rewarding, and it's like multiplying the gifts that people around me have, and that the love that Heidi has for others, I can kind of encourage her with it and share our home. So that's been another thing as I thought about hospitality. I was listening to something also on Family Life about loving neighbors, and the lady was recommending writing down, like, as you meet a neighbor when you're out shoveling your driveway, you can jot down their like the names that you hear of their kids or their people in their lives, their husband, wife, their dog's names. Because you won't necessarily remember them later, and it's helpful to have that springboard of, like, knowing the interests of your neighbors that you might bump into. Mm-hmm. Let's see if I had anything else here. Well, I'm not sure if we're discussing evangelism today, but one final thought I had. So we have a family in our home group who is Mormon, and they've been really a wonderful part of our homeschool group. And at one point we were wanting to have them over, but we kind of ran short on time, and we thought, well, we'll just invite them to home group. And I have to be honest, I had a lot of fear about inviting them to our home group because it seemed like a very, I don't know, almost extreme to say, come into something that is part of our church. But they said yes. They said yes a number of times and been part of our home group. And I think, I hope that God's at work in their hearts. But I guess I'd also appreciate prayer for just boldness to be able to share the gospel, that God would give me the right opportunity and the right words to share the gospel. Because this woman who I'm good friends with, she's part of our homeschool group, has been asking questions. And I want to move past the fear and embrace the friendship of answering questions and sharing as God gives me, well, God's given me a relationship with him. And I want her to come, I want her and her family to come to know the Lord and to be in heaven with us one day. I had one other thought. So David, my husband, has made friends with one of the local coffee shop owners. I feel like coffee is a big means of hospitality too. I mean, just sharing a cup of something warm and delicious is a wonderful thing to bring people together. But David had gotten to know this woman at a coffee shop who owns a coffee shop. They talked about coffee. And then one day after workout, he stopped by, and they had a truck, and it was full of these heavy bags of beans, and there were only a couple women there working. And so he helped carry these bags in one day. And so this woman is a lesbian, the owner of the coffee shop. But I feel like it's kind of like the Rosaria Butterfield, like David's forged his own friendship with this coffee shop owner. And I just think of how God brings these interactions, and how as God gives us grace, it's neat to make something more of them and to use those opportunities that God gives us to share his love with people around us. So thank you. Those are just a few of my thoughts.
Yeah, thank you, Julie. Indeed. Amy, if you want to do the same, if you could share, thank you for coming over from the kids' class, and thank you.
Hi. I haven't been part of this class because I've been with the kids next door, so I don't know exactly what you've been learning aside from what Ed has shared and what I see on the outlines that come home. But Francis had asked if I'd share a little bit about evangelism and how that looks in relationships I have, which I thought was, I was a strange person to ask because I don't feel like I excel at all when it comes to evangelism. And he asked specifically me to talk about this relationship I have with a former coworker. And as I thought back in our relationship, I realized she's the one who befriended me. I did not reach out to her. She, when I was relatively new to Maryland, we're coworkers. We taught in the same school together. And she had Ed and I over for brunch with another couple, another coworker. And later she invited me to take a cooking class with her. And so we just developed a friendship through common interests. And so it wasn't that I reached out to her because she was an unbeliever. I just reached out, or she reached out to me, I guess, because I didn't really have any friends. And we are just genuinely good friends just because we are have like interests. We're at a similar stage in life. And so she hasn't really been necessarily a project, which I think is works well when it comes to evangelism. If you're not necessarily like, oh, you do not believe in Jesus, let me have a relationship with you so that I can help fix that. But that maybe it can occur more naturally when we genuinely enjoy the other people and reach out to them just as other human beings. So anyways, I've gotten to know this friend, Kim. We're good friends. We had our first kids around the same time. We live near each other. So we do play dates together. We go to each other's birthday parties for our kids. We just live life together, I guess, just as you would with any other friend. And so in that way, I don't think I reach out to her. I don't evangelize her in any other way than I would a typical friend. I do think that as I had kids first, women at New Hope have loved me through bringing me meals, through sending encouraging texts, through inviting me over for a play date when I had just one baby and was really entering this new life of motherhood. And so when she had her first kid, I was able to love her as women at New Hope had taught me to love. And so I think that probably has struck a chord with her more than anything else. She doesn't necessarily ask me about my faith, but she asks me about community. And she wants to know, like, where are these relationships that I formed? Where do they come from? Or, like, where do you find babysitters? I said, oh, well, you know, we're in growth group with these families, and they have older kids. And so it's natural for them to come watch my kids because they watch my kids at growth group. And so I know them and I trust them. And she doesn't have that because she doesn't have a church community. And so I think that's what's piqued her interest in coming to church. It doesn't necessarily have to do with Christ. I wish I could say I've had lots of deep faith conversations with her. I wish I could say that I had asked her if she knows where she's going when she dies. But I have not. And I'm ashamed to say that we haven't had those conversations if we've been good friends for 5 years. But we haven't. And perhaps the Lord hasn't opened those doors for a reason. But he has opened the doors to invite her into the community of New Hope. And so that's actually where this Crock-Pot freezer event thing that we do twice a year, that actually was born out of this friendship. Because my friend, she still works full-time in the school. She doesn't have a lot of free time. But she needs to cook for her family. I need to cook for my family. And so we got together with just a couple other ladies actually from New Hope to do just small freezer cooking sessions. So we'd get together in the evening, make 5 meals, and go our separate ways. And I thought, oh, a great way to meet her need, meet my need, and invite her to know a couple other Christian women. And then it blossomed into doing it at New Hope. And so now we have, 20 to 30 women coming together. And so she comes to those events. And it works well because she can provide food for her family and do something practical. But in doing that, she's sitting there and you're talking, of course, as you for 2 hours are making food. She's talking and getting to know ladies at New Hope. And then last month she came to the ladies' night out where we got together at Pastoral's and had dinner. And again, it meets a real need for her after working all day. She needs to eat dinner. But she also craves that relationship with other women. And so she said, when I invited her at first, she said, oh, I'm excited to come meet some new people. And so, again, that's what she's craving, is community. And so looking back over our friendship, I think maybe that's one way to win others to Christ is not necessarily to I should have thought how to say this properly. But ultimately her need is for Christ. But the door she's opening is through community. And so I think if you can see that in your friendships, like what are they interested in and how can the church meet that need, then my hope is that someday she'll be enfolded into a church and then we'll learn about the relationship with Christ and with God. And she did. Actually, they did come to a service. For 5 years, I've been inviting her to New Hope. Or even I just have encouraged her to go to a church. I don't think it has anything to do with New Hope that's going to save her. But she's, for whatever reason, hasn't not ever come to church. But they're very loyal and faithful and supportive friends. And Ed and I thought, well, why don't we invite them to James's baptism? I mean, I don't typically invite friends to baptism, but why not? And they came. And they came and they heard the gospel and they walked through the doors of the church, which I think some walls have been put up there in their lives. And so, again, I think it had nothing to do with come to church and hear the gospel, but they came to be supportive of us as their friends. Mm-hmm. And so, hey, if the Lord will use that, let's take advantage of inviting them to things like that. And so I guess just the other thought I had when my parents were visiting and when I told them I was going to talk today, my mom said, when I was talking about evangelism, she said, I think it's pretty basic. You live your life. And so I think that's very true, that when you just live your life and you interact with others, they hear what you're doing and they want to be part of it. I think the Lord can use that. Yeah. So I don't know if that's helpful, but mm-hmm. that's just in my experience of stumbling along mm-hmm. and trying to win others to Christ.
Yeah, indeed. Thank you. Thanks, Amy.
Keep listening. Todd and Deb, I'm not sure who's going to speak from you guys, but if you could share a little bit, and then I think the Oxes are going to come up. So you could both come up. You're both welcome.
Thanks. Francis had asked us to share some thoughts about this. One thing that we do when we got to dinner, probably 9 times out of 10, we ask our server, I'll say, we're going to pray before our meal. You know, can we pray for you? And very easily done, but it's amazing the response you get sometimes. We've had a server break down in tears. She was a believer, but she just felt like she was all alone in the restaurant. Mm. We've had people that will just stand there and wait for us to pray for them. We've had one server, I think, actually sat down with us and while we prayed. So, and then what we try and do is we try and follow up and pray for them down the road. And in our family, we still think of some of the people that you know have served us. And so that's a small thing. Mm-hmm. And then you asked about what I do at work. I have 8 employees, all female. And so at Easter time, I get red flowers, usually ostromarias, that are blood red, and I share the gospel with them. And I say, you know, this weekend, upcoming weekend, I challenge you to, you know, enjoy your family, but think about what Christ did for us and how he shed his blood. Mm-hmm. So when you look at these flowers, you see that. So it's kind of neat because now I can, it's probably the 3rd or 4th time I've done it now, and now I can say, does anyone want to explain to us why I'm giving you flowers? And a couple of them will kind of, you know, restate the gospel a little bit. So that's pretty cool. And then I have patients that if they're going through a hard time or whatever, I'll say at the end of the appointment, is there anything or can I pray for you about this? Or can I put you on my prayer list? And again, so then I go in the back and I have a little notebook that I put their names in and what I should be praying for them. Hmm. And you just don't know what effect that has on them, but it's something small and it certainly can't hurt. So.
I think many of you know that we fostered 2 little boys about a year ago, and through that experience, we sort of had a unique opportunity to get to know some of their extended family, and they came from a very difficult family life of drug abuse and alcohol abuse and jail time and very varied and assorted background through their extended family with that. But in all of that, I had opportunity to meet their aunt who was fostering their 2 older siblings. And during that time, God just kind of prompted me to get to know her a little better. And I contacted her, not knowing what her response would be, but invited her to coffee. And she responded very favorably, and so we did that twice, and then I invited her once to go out to breakfast, and she was willing to do that too, and did the same thing that Todd usually does when we go out to eat and asked our server if I could pray for her, and she gave me some requests, and so then I asked the lady I was with, Kia, you know, do you mind if I pray for you too? And she said, sure. So I said grace, and I prayed for the server, and I prayed for Kia. And after I said amen, I looked at her, she kind of sat up and adjusted her sweater and said, that was nice. And so, you know, just had this on again, off again sort of relationship with her, very unpredictable because I don't hear from her for 3 months. And then I'll contact her and sometimes I don't hear from her. Sometimes I do hear from her. But around November, I came to Todd and said, you know, I really have this feeling like we should invite she and her husband and their kids that they're fostering for Thanksgiving. And he was like, oh, okay.
I wasn't too into it. I must confess.
And we invited another family we had coming over. And so then I did end up contacting. We prayed about it. I contacted Kia. And I thought, you know, I probably won't hear from her or anything. Well, like 2 hours later, I got a very enthusiastic, we'd love to come. So they did end up coming. And her husband said to me while they were there, he said, yeah, you know, when you invited us, I thought, that's random. And I was thinking, yeah, I thought so too. So, but we had a nice opportunity to talk with them. And we had done something little that we've done before, but had like a pumpkin thing that we had pieces of paper and people wrote down things they were thankful for and put them in there during the early part of the time we're there. And then the afternoon we took it out, passed it around, everybody pulled one out and read the thing, you know, they were anonymous, but read them. And we had a time of prayer, and Kia was one of the first ones to put what she was thankful for into the pumpkin. And then when we had our time of prayer, her husband Mo prayed, and we were really surprised at that, very grateful for that. And just having the kids there too, it was really nice. And then Todd did a little, just like a fun icebreaker kind of quiz thing, and broke us into groups then to answer these questions. And at the very end, before they left, Mo was kind of looking around. He was watching our older kids interacting with the younger kids and just standing there watching them, like that was really unique. And made a point to say something to Noah, because Noah and Elijah, one of the little guys we fostered, had a kind of special relationship. And he wanted to make a point to say something to Noah about not forgetting Elijah. And before he left then, he said, you know, I've never been somewhere to somebody's house before where I took a quiz. This was really kind of nice. And so that was the end of that. But he and Todd had talked a little bit, and Todd's thinking about inviting him to go to a basketball game. So, you know, that's an interest of Mo's, and see if we can get the little boy they're fostering maybe involved with that and with Noah too. But just opportunities to, I don't know, they're just all over the place, that to engage people, to love people that you don't know, doesn't require much except going out on a limb and being willing to just offer them a hand, grace, love, many things you want to call it, but to love people that need to be loved, and everybody needs that. So that's it.
Great. I will say that we debated the whole thing about inviting them over for Thanksgiving quite a bit. It was probably in October we started talking about it. And so there was a lot of time spent, should we, shouldn't we? And then after everyone left, we're like, what were we thinking? That was so easy. And, you know, yeah, we were blessed by it. So I would encourage everyone to do that.
Great. Thank you. Steve and or Karen, come on up for a second. As they come up, just a little quote that I was reading in one book, and it said, this man's wife asked, do I have a sign on my forehead that says, please speak to me? She's out shopping, and people are always stopping her and talking. And then he writes, when I go to the grocery store, no one talks to me. Why? Because I'm on a mission. The sign on my forehead says, please don't talk to me. I'm not open. I'm not interested in you. Whereas her sign says, I'm interested. I'll come talk to me. That's just an interesting little quote where, you know, what sign do we wear on our forehead? Do we have time for anybody, or just, I got to get that milk, I got to get that chocolate, I got to get out of here? So anyways, thank you for coming. And then Kelly, you're here somewhere, aren't you? If you could come on up after, that'd be great. Thanks.
I wanted to share about a few different things. I guess the first is some opportunity that we Karen and I had before we had children to give rides to various people to church. I can think of three of them. One was an older gentleman who had been attending our church, and the person who was giving him a ride no longer could. And then there was another guy who was maybe 10 or 15 years older than us, who I had met out sharing the gospel along Carroll Creek. And he was an immigrant from Sierra Leone, and he didn't have a car at the time and didn't have a church in the area, so I invited him to come. And another was a high school student who didn't yet have his driver's license. So I guess for a while, Karen and I were giving rides to 2 to 3 of these guys at a time. So we had a full car load coming to church. But the car rides really provided a lot of opportunity to get to know these people. One man we learned he'd been a custodian, he'd had an accident, he'd had become somewhat disabled, and he hadn't really grown up with much of a Christian background, and the background that he did have, there wasn't as much clarity in the gospel as we might hope. So, there were ways that we got to address things like that with him. Hmm. The fellow from Africa, we got to learn about him living through a civil war, about growing up in a, seems to be an evangelical church, and his father quizzing him on the way home about the sermon, making sure that he had understood it.
Did you guys hear that?
And that came up because we did exactly the same thing with the folks who rode in our car. The high school student, he had grown up in a rather dysfunctional family. He had one sister who was a believer, and she had married and his brother-in-law through her was also a believer. So he had some Christian influence, but also a lot of poor influence in his home that he lived around. So, it provided opportunities to explain more clearly the gospel and to speak the gospel more pointedly to various points in their life, addressing things like how does the gospel apply to who we date? How does the gospel apply to marriage? Can we use that as an end for securing our immigration status? lots of interesting conversations and lots of opportunities to talk about what was the sermon or various scripture that we'd been reading. Did you want to share anything else about that? Yeah. Okay. One other thing I wanted to share about was a neighbor who, at the time I met him, he was going through a divorce, and he had two elementary-aged children. And we met him up at the park in our neighborhood. We had our children up there playing. His children were up there playing, and he was there with his sister. And we just asked them if they were attending church. They weren't attending church, but they did have a Christian background, had regularly attended in the past. Hmm. But the time weren't in the best spiritual state. So we had invited them to New Hope and didn't see them for another, I'm guessing it was 2 or 3 months. And then he showed up here one day. And I think I had, if I recall correctly, I had trouble placing who he was. Honestly, I'm not sure if he came through our invitation or whether it was through his own research. But he came here a few times, and he ended up settling at another church, and has become active in their ministries there, and seems to be in a much more solid place spiritually than he was. But after he began coming here a few times, we began seeing him more frequently around the neighborhood. When we'd pass his house and see him out, we'd walk by and say hi, see how he was doing, or you know, driving by. His house is near the entrance to the neighborhood, so I'd often see him getting out of his car and stop and talk till someone pulled up behind me and I had to go. I was able to have him over for dinner one night, and just I think we served through a difficult time in his life to sort of provide some stability and some support and direction toward Christ. And I guess the last thing I wanted to share was some other neighbors. It's a young lady and her boyfriend. They have a child together. They moved into our neighborhood from Arizona, so she's a long way from her family. And so Karen invited her to go running with her, invited her over for play dates. And, that set some foundation for talking about spiritual things, seeing, she came from a Roman Catholic background. Her father had ended up leaving that for Mormonism. And, we were able to address a little bit with a little bit more clarity. Well, what really is it to follow Christ? And there came a point where the boyfriend was arrested, and so she and the daughter were without him. He was the one earning the money for several months. And when that happened, Karen was the one she knew to go down the street and to find support. And so she spent much of that first day over at our house, and several days, several other days she came over, spent large amounts of time. I don't know if you want to share anything about that time.
One of the things I love about Steve is he's very orderly. So easy to follow. Like, I look back and I'm like, well, how did we meet that person? Like, what transpired? What were the specifics? I don't remember the specifics of the conversations and stuff. One of the things I think, like, each of these people that stands out as you're talking about it is you just, like, we met somebody and then it sparked, like, a note of curiosity. It's like, okay, who are you? What makes you who you are? And that opened up a door, because usually people, like, they don't have somebody talking to them. And since we're egocentric people, like, there's just an avid desire to talk about ourselves. So, like, if we just said, like, well, tell us about yourself, and to the neighbors or to, like, people we met. I think Jolie might have said you have to go and write down their names afterwards. That's like, yeah, that's pretty important, because if you see them again, then you hope you remember what they talked about. But, like, that was kind of a springboard to be able to talk about more stuff, because they're like, the first step was that they would tell us about themselves, and then the second step, they'd tell us about other people around them, and then the third step, they start talking about things that were more important, maybe spiritual or, like, personal. So with Esmeralda, that was the same thing, and then once she knew she had a safe environment where she could talk about, like, things that were personal, then she felt like she could trust us a little bit more. And also, I've got kids. My house is a disaster. So she can look at me and be like, I can do something better than this lady. Like, I can keep my house cleaner. So they feel really confident going in my house. Yeah.
I'm going to cut you there. Thank you, because I have 2 minutes for Kelly, and that's probably not fair to her. But thank you very much, Steve and Karen. That's also very helpful. And Kelly's thinking, how am I going to do this in 2 minutes or less? That's how I feel when I preach. I'm going to do this in less than 2 hours, but just kidding. Thank you, Kelly.
Real quick, I think one thing that has made both evangelism and hospitality easier for me is teamwork. Laura is very good at cooking and baking, and I'm very good at eating. And so we work together. Sometimes we have brunches where we just invite a bunch of people, and she does most of the food. and she talks, too. So I kind of have the short end, I think, or bringing the short end. So doing it together, inviting both churched and non-churched people, inviting different personalities. My sister-in-law is a lot friendlier and more outgoing than I am. I love inviting her to stuff. And then I also invite people who are more quiet as well. So I think inviting a mix of people. Keep food simple. Don't worry about it. I had people over last Sunday, and we had peanut butter and jelly. And it was great. I think that's one of the most intimidating things for me is having a bunch of people over is what do I make for food? So if anybody has good recipes out there, then bring them my way. I think a big thing is being willing to be awkward. My neighborhood has a tight community because that is their community, where mine is here. So what happens is I go outside to talk to them, and they all know each other, and I can feel like I'm back in middle school and the odd man out. But the Lord uses it. I've had very deep conversations with a couple of my neighbors, and there's other times when we just talk about the weather. So it's really up to the Lord, but he can use that and your willingness to be awkward and feel like odd man out. The biggest thing I would say is pray, be intentional, and it's the Lord's show. Just let him show you what to say and when to say something. A very quick story of this happening to me is I was on a train for 10 hours by myself, which I loved. I sat next to a man who was 70s, grew up in the South. He was black. He was very different from me. And we talked for about 5 hours. And he mostly wanted to tell me what he thought about life. And he was a deep talker, which I love. And I was praying the whole time, Lord, I want to share the gospel with this guy. He's talking about life and what happens after you die, and I didn't know how to bring it in. So we had a pause, and I started eating a snack, and I offered him some snack, and that changed his whole attitude. It was wild. He started asking me questions about what I thought, and I got to share the gospel with this man probably 50 different ways, just with the different questions he was asking. It was phenomenal. And he got up out of his seat, and he says, you know, you really gave me something to think about today. And he just got off the train, and I just couldn't believe it. So just stuff like that, praying and being intentional and looking for however the Lord leads.
Yeah, great. Thank you. That was impressive. It's we're past time. I had one from the layman's as well. I think I'm going to email that out to you. There's just some really good hands-on ideas. But you hear the kids out there, and I better let you go. So thank you. Go practice. Go enjoy the Lord's hospitality and minister that to others. You're dismissed.